Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few black-owned radio network that addresses issues with solutions, presents Black Urban America. All you folks that listen by laptops, if you have a question or comment, you make dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Here's the lineup. On Tuesday, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host, Kenny Jones. Every second Tuesday of the month, we have Radio Talk with Chicago. Every third Tuesday of the month, we have Bev Williams, Advocate of Milwaukee. Thursdays, we have Portal Harlem Magazine with Ray A. Young. And on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Steve. Tonight, do black men and women have healthy relationships? Are our relationships being destroyed? Tonight, we have video publisher and professor from University of District Columbia, Dr. Gail George, to speak to us about this issue, about relationships between black men and women. Good evening, Dr. George. How are you?
I'm Peachy King. Good evening, and happy to be here.
Great. Thank you for coming on the show. First, do black relationships today have are they unhealthy?
Well, I think, of course, you know, there are instances where they are unhealthy. You know, I think that we probably wouldn't even be having this conversation if that wasn't the case. I think the next question may be not just why, but really getting into the significance of them in spite of how they show up, because I'm a believer that we need each other, you know, and that being in relationship does give power, I want to say, to navigate in the world. Because we're, you know, it's like you have your, what would be considered your other half. And so I do believe that it's important, and I believe it's important how we come into relationships. And probably the first part of that is reestablishing the value of those relationships. What are they, and what do they mean in the present
time? That's my next question. That's my next question, the values of relationships. What are some of the standard values that exhibit in a healthy relationship? And I think people go throughout their whole entire lives without knowing what are some of the standard values that make a healthy relationship, not only black relationship, in all relationships.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I believe in, I'm a proponent of like gender polarity. And when I say that, I mean that there's an attraction between the masculine and the feminine, you know, and it's not just the masculine embodied in a man and the feminine embodied in a woman, but energetically they draw to each other. And it can be
Do we still have masculine men today? No, seriously. Do we still have masculine men today? And what do I mean by the masculinity? Dress codes, hairstyles, mannerisms, thought processes. Do we still have the masculine man today? And what is to define as the masculine man? I just went off script because you came up with masculinity. Like, I'm looking around. Like, I don't see it. Not the way I grew up. You could tell a man by the way he walk, carry himself, way he treat others, the self-respect that he demands. I don't see that. So, or that's just a personal observation that I see the changes over the decades. So, are there still masculinity today, or like it's either or? Now, for God's sakes, we go in the same bathroom now. I mean, like in some states.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We have locally in D.C. A TEDx, you know, TED Talks, you know, have local events in different areas, and they, you know, they have different topics and stuff. And so last year they had an event here in D.C., and I had a chance to address the panel. And so one of the things I said was that, because one of the things they kept talking about was toxic masculinity. And so my statement was that masculinity is not toxic. So we've hooked those two words together. It comes like a catchphrase that
so
if you're hip,
is,
you know,
toxic masculinity. Like, what does that mean? Like, if I think strongly as a man, I'm being toxic. Or this is what I said. This is what I usually tell young folks today. Prior to my retirement, you know, I used to tell, I grew up in a generation with blue is for boys, pink is for girls. Used that as a metaphor because there were clarity and boundaries among the gender lines. And so I had to describe that. I did literally mean like the color blue for girls. I mean, we that's how they used to separate the babies. You know, they put the boys in blue and they dress up the little girl infants in pink. And that's why I came up with the metaphor. I grew up in a generation where boys were blues for boys and girls, pink is for girls, meaning that there were certain responsibilities for the man and certain responsibilities for the woman. Now, if that's the toxic, well, I'm the most toxic individual in the world.
Yeah, but I think it goes beyond that in the sense that, you know, I mean, there's certain behaviors and certain, I think, too, a way to kind of, I want to say corral men and masculinity into this is how it should be expressed, you know, put certain parameters around in polite company what that should look like. And I think in a conversation I was alluding to was that the question came up why women are attracted to certain men or certain, you know, certain kind of men and, you know, and not others, you know, and
that's true.
My point was that the feminine, you know, is attracted to or drawn to the masculinity, and is not toxic. And even whatever you call it, on some level, there's a primal draw of the feminine to the masculine. I mean, they attract, right, to each other. And so the question then becomes, you know, how is that masculinity expressing? And, you know, and some of that would be in the ways that you're talking about, but there is in the sense that there's some men that, you know, they aren't apologizing for it, you know. They're not trying to fit into a certain mold that society says this is how you should act or operate, you know, to prove that you are evolved or enlightened or, you know, whatever that conversation ultimately is, but just expressing, you know, naturally as the masculine. It goes beyond roles. It goes beyond colors, but really into the energetics of what the masculine brings to the table. And
so what is the masculine energy? When you say masculine energy, what does that mean today? Because I know how I was raised, and then I could go back. Mm-hmm. I could go into that later about our histories, mm-hmm. our past experience. How do they define our relationships today? So what is masculine energy supposed to be today? Do I have my own perception what masculine energy is supposed to be? So what are they saying now? What is the social, political masculinity standards of man today?
Well, you know, I think it kind of ties into concepts that we're seeing now, even about what is politically correct, you know. We know our society has changed a lot in terms of what behaviors are acceptable in it, you know. But when I talk energetically, you know, one of the things I learned, it's kind of like the difference between the straight line and the curve. So they're both lines, right? They have different shapes. They move in different ways. And, you know, if you only have straight lines, you're only going to be able to create certain shapes. Just like if you only have curves, you're going to have just that curve curling on itself, you know, like scribble scrabble, right? But when you have both together, they can create any shape, any geometric shape that you look that you could see in different proportions. And so the importance is not in question as far as having, you know, both masculine and feminine energy, and that we do need each other, you know, but it's just about how we come together in a way that is a full and complete expression of both energies, that creates space for that, because when they come together, then they can create anything, you know, any shape, but also anything in this reality that we're experiencing. And I mean, and you can see that in just the creation of children, you know, of a child, you know, that's like, you know, two microscopic particles coming together and creating a whole nother, you know, generation, a whole nother reality. But energetically and on a spiritual level, the same thing is happening, you know, when the masks come together. And so they are very important. Those connections are very valuable. And I think as far as, you know, going back to your question about what does it look like, what does healthy relationships look like, do we have healthy relationships, I think if you're understanding that or getting a sense of that value, and then I say stay in your lane, you know, in the sense of, you know, bringing that energy to the table, you know, on a consistent basis, then there is no conflict. Then of course there's a healthy relationship, because there's a full appreciation of what both parties bring to the table and the importance of both parties, that they, you know, that they are both essential to creating anything.
So here we have mm-hmm. these both parties come to the mm-hmm. table. What makes that relationship wrong or unhealthy? You got two individuals, you know, one straight, one curved, and they think mm-hmm. they think they have the energy. They could do it and everything. But in time, they find out their relationship is unhealthy. So where is the mistake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
How is it unhealthy? Because they get ready to get separated or divorced, they're having arguments, that the respect that was there in the beginning is not there any longer. So is it toxic, the word that you used earlier? Is it the relationship, is it toxic now? You know, how did it become unhealthy? Where did it go wrong from these two entities coming to the table, thinking that they can't create something do anything, conquer the world together, be a power couple or whatever, to it's a toxic and unhealthy relationship. How do you get there? Well, the shortcoming.
I think it, you know, it starts, you know, with the intention. Like, so what are you really creating? You know, there's a higher percentage of divorce in the Western world where you know your partner, people live with your partner.
72.9%. 72.9%.
Okay. Where, but just think about countries where the marriage is
at least that what it was in 2019, 72.9%. Mm-hmm. Probably higher now.
Yeah, that. Yeah, it probably went up during COVID, probably,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
People, you know, quarantine. But, you know, but in countries where the marriages are arranged, they don't have that degree of divorce and disharmony. Not that there is none, but the concept is that generally, if you're in an arranged marriage or that kind of setting, there is a vision or an idea, a concept of what marriage is and what the power and importance of that union is going to be. There are a lot of factors that pull away, you know, or pull at relationships. I mean, even if you ever had a magnet and tried this experiment, you know, they're magnets, depending on the magnets, that pull together and that'll snap right together, you know. But if you break a magnet, oftentimes the pieces repel each other. If you ever had that experience where your two magnets are repelling each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we want to do is to create the polarity in the relationship that pulls together and that continues to be reinforced as a unit, because basically what's happening is that those two pieces or those two magnets are sharing one field, right, one magnetic field, and that's why they draw together and stay together. But if you're not sharing that one field or creating that kind of dynamic in the sense of one magnetic field with the union, then it's always going to repel and it's never going to work. And that happens, you know, in the first 30 days, 90 days, or after 30 years. I mean, people, you know, spend years and years, you know, in relationships that are failing and then are increasingly getting worse. And I think more of that is happening today because the concept of what marriage looked like in the past is not the one that's going to sustain going into the future. And, you know, there's so much changing and so much, you know, so much going on in our current reality on so many levels that we do need to upgrade. It's like an upgrade, but it's also like ancient truths, you know, like before how things used to be, not just in grandmama's day, you know, but really, like, what are the ancient truths that, you know, what is the energetics of the masculine and feminine? You know, how do they come together? How do they create, you know, a union? But then also, what is the purpose of that union? You know, what are we doing? You know, what are we creating? You know, are we just, you know, eating food and eating cake and, you know, and not really having some kind of broader vision for what the union is going to accomplish? I mean, you can start with children, but if you have children, you know, there's some level of purpose that the relationship has. But, you know, oftentimes we give more thought to our businesses or, you know, other things than that life partnership that really is going to sustain everything.
But is there anything wrong with having other priorities that want to having a man or a woman? I just went off script. You said something that triggered a question. And so is that wrong?
Is what wrong?
Having other priorities that besides wanting to get married or wanting to get into a relationship. like starting a business, getting an education. You know, you put marriage and relationship on a back burner. And maybe that's how come there's so many single people today or having problems with dating because they have other priorities in their lifestyle. Is that wrong? Compared to 7 years ago, like soon as you graduate from high school, you get married. Now, I come to find out in my reading, the reason why was that it was one less mouth to feed.
Yeah. I mean, and again, that goes back to what is the intention? Like, what is the point? What's the purpose? I mean, anybody who's had a successful or failed relationship knows that that union is really critical, you know, I mean, to the type of success or the type of experiences you have in your life.
Yeah. I could touch on that. Before we get to the experience, I have one question. Are our relationships, now you spoke of this like for like 2 minutes, maybe a minute. Can you expand on this thought? Are our relationships rooted in a political and social system?
Yeah, I think they're definitely influenced by a social system. You know, I was on a seminar the other day, and they were talking about how they were talking about population and population growth. And I'm an economist by training, so we're always thinking about allocating resources, you know, to create an outcome, a desired outcome, right? And so when you think about population growth, one of the things that they were, one of the solutions they were promoting was to educate women, because what they said is more educated women have less children. The more educated the woman is, the less children
have. That's true. That's true. It was a study done like early 2000, I believe. That in a lot of societies, when women get educated, they put less energy, or use your word, less energy, or starting a family, or having less children. You know, maybe one child, two at the most.
Right.
The more educated a woman is, the less children that she has. Why is that?
Yeah. And so, I mean, well, I was going to go back to the question about the political.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. It's something that you said to trigger a question. I do that sometimes because I don't want to lose the door because I don't have that question written down. And when you say something that triggered my brain to ask a question that I think wants you to expand on, I do that. I do that often. You know, I'll go off script in a minute. But yes, please go back. Go back to the political influences.
Yeah, the fact that that these you know, economists and thought leaders were thinking of ways to coerce women to have less children, and the solution was to educate them. But the point is that the fundamental point is that policymakers, thought leaders, you know, economists and people that are creating policies are determining what the objective and agenda that they want to carry out and how to exact that. And so, yes, in our relationships and our, you know, our family structures, there are influences and things that are happening around us that are coercing us to certain behaviors or away from other behaviors. Unless that unit, and that unit has the power to come together and be self-contained and determine for itself what its objectives are. You know, that the family unit is the first measure of, you know, your capacity for sovereignty, because, you know, you have a whole unit there and it has its own agenda and objectives and things that it needs to happen in order to sustain it, right? And so, you know, as that individual, as that unit that operates in society, it can determine what values, you know, what things it values and prioritizes for the benefit of that unit of that family dynamic that they're creating. And so, you know, the thing with educating women and children, you know, there's lots of information around that, but I think a lot of it, you know, there definitely is an agenda to, you know, to encourage women, you know, away from a younger woman. You know, I felt a lot of pressure to, you know, not long after the civil rights movement, opportunities are opening up and you could be the first woman this or the first
black
woman that.
I remember.
You were educated and encouraged to do all the things, you know, and to really be all the things and not to think about, you know, more traditional, you know, expressions of our femininity or our lives or you know, in the sense of getting married and having children. And it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's old. That's what people used to do, you know. You don't have to do
right.
that anymore because you can now be such and such. And then what's happened, though, is, you know, these generations later where these women, you know, a lot of women and not just women, but just have, you know, have bought that and not had the children and not gotten married and not had, you know, that thing and, you know, are getting to an age and a stage where that's not going to happen for them and, you know, trying to reconcile what that really means for their lives, you know.
In response to that, Dr. Joy, I believe that men and women are given certain biological tendencies. And what do I mean by that? Well, womanhood is not, well, I'm not saying womanhood is defined by children, but being a woman, now this has been studied, at a certain point in your life cycle, you do find a need to be a mother. Motherhood is attached to womanhood. I mean, they go, you know, they like sisters, you know, and you find out that, oh, when they accomplish certain levels in their life, what have you, they'll light click on in their internalization that, hey, something's missing. I want a child.
Hmm.
I want to be a mom.
Yeah. You know, in African tradition, that is considered the initiation into womanhood. You know.
Okay.
You know. Yeah. So that, you know, so there was no concern about it being too young or any of that kind of stuff. But, you know, that's connected to that expression and initiation into womanhood. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you find that a lot of educated female millennials are waiting till like at 30, because they're going to spend their whole 20s trying to establish this, travel, or whatever. You know, do the things they need to do in order to call themselves. And then and that leads into my next question, too, the experiences. Is our relationship influenced? And we touched on this a few minutes ago. We just touched on it about history and experiences. Is our relationship influenced by our experiences? And how?
Mm-hmm. Say that again. I'm sorry, mister.
Are our relationships influenced
yeah.
by our experiences and how?
Yeah, I mean, we are on some level the, you know, the accumulation of our experiences, absolutely. But, you know, we also determine what we're going to do with that going forward. Like, do we allow those experiences, those past experiences to determine or shape what our experiences will be going forward. So, you know, I've heard people say, oh, I went out with somebody that was a Leo. I'll never date a Leo again. You know
what I mean? I heard that before.
Yeah. Like construct all kinds of parameters and, you know, barriers, you know, around their future experience based on something that happened in the past. And I think that starts to make the world a lot smaller going forward, you know, in the sense of being open to new experiences and reshaping what those experiences were in the past, looking at them as like lessons, you know, like, or something that's, you know, instructive, but not in the sense of, okay, well, they'll never get me again, you know, I'm shutting down. But,
you know, a lot of people are like that, and brings our, and again, that leads right into the next question too. But before I get into the next question, right, I just want to say that it leads to how we think about each other, how we treat each other, because through certain experiences that we have in the past, which leads into like behaviors. Are our relationships influenced by our behaviors? Like, for example,
absolutely,
you speak about the sister that said, oh, I had a terrible date with this Leo. I'll never date a Leo again. And I'm finding that especially like under 35, I'm going to say under 40, their acceptance of certain behaviors. And some of these behaviors lead to unhealthiness. For example, domestic violence, because they've been exposed in their history, in their experience, to domestic violence or verbal abuse. See a lot of that, verbal abuse, because this is something that they accepted throughout their experiences. So, according to our behaviors, or a person being exposed to negative behavior and they meet somebody that got positive behavior and don't exhibit none of those negative behaviors, they get abused, because what this individual been experiencing in history is.
Yeah, I believe that we continue to repeat patterns, you know, from our experiences until we become conscious upwardly aware of them, and then decide that we're gonna change them. And so without, you know, that awareness, oftentimes, you know, and sometimes we might not even be living the life that we really would prefer to live, might be capable of living, because we are defending against some negative past experience. Or
Dr. Joyce, I had a client. Yeah. I had a client, right? She was married three different times. And she married an abuser. And she's not even 40 yet. I was working with this client about a year ago. She got married. That she believed in marriage. She got married three different times to the same kind of man. How come? Now, when I did her family assessment, I found out it was three generations. Listen to me now. Three generations of family violence. Now, yes, again, like, how do you break that kind of cycle? And
well, I mean,
and her adult daughter was entering an abusive relationship. So that's four.
Yeah.
That's four.
Yeah. I mean, the first step of that is being aware of the pattern, you know, of the cycle. Because what happens is she's not consciously entering into a relationship. She's, you know, meeting somebody who looks cute or doing whatever, you know what I mean, whatever that people do. And so that's why I'm a big proponent of, you know, being mindful and thoughtful, beginning as you want to end something, you know, beginning with the intentions clear that I'm looking for my mate, my life partner, you know, that kind of thing. And
what
you
is
know,
that? What's a life partner? For me, I've been hearing that for most of my adult life. It came out, it became an expression in the late 80s. What's a life partner? When we got, it was 75%. Of marriages in a divorce. Matter of fact, it used to be hard to get a divorce. Now you got to do it to self-divorce. I mean, come on now, like, really, what's a life partner? What does that really mean? Now, I understand you broke down the two lines, the curve and the straight, and one, two engines come to the table. You know, like, what does that mean? What is a life partner? And I'm an old man. I still don't know what that means.
Yeah, but and I think it depends on, you know, on the person. The concept is that as long as you're embodied, you know, we're embodied as men and women, there's always going to be a draw, a pull, a need. And so the question then becomes, how do you meet that need? You know, I think we have, you know, generations that are, we're still trying to make peace with, do we need it? You know, I mean, that's a whole conversation that is, you know, like, I don't need that, or I don't want it, or whatever, you know. But there are some... you know, again, going back to being mindful and thoughtful and, you know, about, you know, as mindful as you would be about choosing a career. You know, I used to teach in a workforce development program, and I had so many students who were like, oh, well, what you studying? I'm in the HVAC program, you know, or I'm in this program. So why are you in the program? Well, they say it pays more, you know, or they say they're hiring for this or that kind of thing. You know, nothing about who is this person, you know, what are their skill sets, you know, what are their interests, you know.
A lot of people that participate in these programs don't have any self-awareness, no self-doubt, even we talk about 45, 50-year-old women. We ain't talking about young girls. We ain't talking about 18, 19-year-olds. We talk about 45, 50-year-old women that don't really have the self-awareness that is needed to be marketable or successful. We talk about starting, you mentioned earlier about starting businesses. How can you start a business if you don't have any self-awareness or self-confidence? Or self-concept. I think you need to work on that before you could talk about anything about starting businesses, furthering education, or you got to do it simultaneously.
Yeah, but, you know, where do you get that? You know, who's teaching that? Where do you, you know what I mean? Like in most people's lives, I mean, unless you have some
We need workshops. Just like we need curriculums. Self-awareness curriculums, we need self-awareness curriculums in a high school, we need at the community college level, and we need in these programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, but you know, it's not happening now. You know,
I know it's not happening. I know it's not happening.
Yeah.
But it has to happen. It has to be somebody implement that thought process in our institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Especially working with certain populations, especially working with maybe average family. If people or middle income, upper income don't have any self-awareness, don't have a self-concept. They just got lucky. They'll have no idea of cultural institutions, cultural awareness, how cultural awareness involved in self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Self-responsibilities. I'm sorry, go ahead. You struck a nerve there, Dr. George, very good, because I could go on about self-awareness. That's my, I instituted that as part of my counseling techniques, you know, so.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm retired now, but, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. George.
No. I was just saying, you know, again, that the way you begin is the way you end. And so, in our lives, the patterns and the things that we find ourselves or things that we find ourselves experiencing, you know, oftentimes really come from these patterns, these unconscious, subconscious things that we're trying to play out. And it really speaks to a need for more awareness, but also a different kind of approach and perspective to what our lives are. You know,
approach
some people
believe,
that our whole lives are really about learning these, but you can't teach maturity, you know, and so it doesn't matter. Age is not even, you know, doesn't even factor in on some level as far
That's
as
true.
If you have
That's
never
true.
Had,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, had that type of exposure or that type of opportunity, I want to say, to really think about what your life is and how you, you know, how you want it to be. So,
now,
yeah.
This is the part of my script I'm going to get ready. I'm going to get away from the theoretical process and really get into the practical processes in the last few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Do black women disrespect black men? What's your perspective on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would say not all black women disrespect black men. Man, I think we'd have to get, about a circumstance, but it does happen, can happen, you know. And I think that, it can't persist like that. You know, that's part of what creates
well,
the issue.
Well, let me ask you this. Do a majority, and vice versa, I ain't letting the brothers off the hook, do a majority of black women today, what are their attitudes about black men?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to profess to speak for black women, honestly, but I just think that there is a real need to come together. You know, I think we celebrate, you know, when we see couples that are successful, that are, you know, healthy and working together and prospering, you know, in a powerful way. I think
it's so beautiful, but it's so beautiful because we don't see a lot of that anymore like we used to see. It used to be common.
Yeah.
It used to be, while I was growing up, it was common. It wasn't nothing for the black man to be coming out the house in the morning going to work. That was common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was common to see a couple married for 25 years. It was common. But now it's the opposite. You know, and at what caused that? What caused that to be the opposite, the breakdown of the black man-woman relationship? Because one time in our history, the black man, black woman had a strong relationship. What happened? What happened to that, what we call that union? What happened to that life partner that you mentioned 15 minutes ago? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it. I don't see it. Look, when you have, I mean, we always had brothers that have the side piece and they got impregnated their side piece, but they always had home base or what have you, and they took care of the kids. It was responsibility. That's why I was talking about the blue for boys and the pink for girls, because there was a that's all part of the metaphorically being responsible and what have you. We always had that. That is nothing new. But now, it's expected. It's celebrated. What happened?
I mean, I think it's clear that there's been a shift in values, you know, not just in the values that we live with, but in, you know, how we value relationships.
Well,
when you talk about...
Do stereotypes play a part of this?
Yeah, but you know, that's like a chicken or the egg question. You know, which came first? Yeah, I think we've had a shift in values. We've had so many shifts in society, the way our society functions, the way it's structured, you know, what is valued in society. You know, you touched on it earlier about people, you know, kind of prioritizing their businesses or education or other things before relationships, where there was a time when people understood, you know, I gotta have a home base. I gotta, you know, get this part right and get it in place so that I can build, you know, those other aspects of my life. And that was a priority. And so it's like we live in a time where, you know, you can function, you know. I mean, you know, there was a time when, you know, it was like almost impossible to think about raising a child by yourself, to a time where people can do it. Not that it's the best, not that it's, you know, done well. Or
now people are left to do it. Now there are women, because of their income level and their educational level, shoot, they don't mind being single parents today. They can afford it. They really don't need us. And that's why I talk about the breakdown, and that leads to the breakdown of the black family, which that's a whole other show. Let me ask you one or two more questions, then I'm going to let you go. What should be the age difference between a man and woman?
Well, different. Say about 10 years.
10 years.
One of my mentors says that the man should be older, 10 years older, and the other one believes that they should be younger. You know, but for different reasons. You know, one being about maturity, and and the other about longevity, the longevity of the relationship and vitality of the relationship. So I think it depends, though, on the people, you know, again. And, yeah.
You think there's a new wave coming? No, this has been discussed This has been on the debate floor of life for 30 years now. It's becoming more and more. You think a man should have more than one wife? Huh?
I think that...
Because other cultures have it, and they're successful with it.
Yeah, I think people should do, you know, what they want to do. But and there are women and structures that support that. I think the challenge is when you elect to do something and everybody isn't on board or doesn't have the opportunity to decide if that's what they want to do, you know? So, I mean, the short answer is I think that people, you know, we're sovereign beings. We can decide and determine this is how I want to live my life. But be honest with that, you know, as opposed to, making it about something else or forcing someone into something that they right. that they may not want to be a part of, you know.
Well, Dr. George, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. It's been a very stimulating, interesting discussion about our relationships, and I hope that we can move towards in creating better and more positive relationship in our culture because it's needed. And I thank you for coming on tonight. And I really am appreciative of the discussion. Okay, folks, that's it for this week. As always, it's another week of an educational topic. As always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.